Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of London. I also serve the Reina Mission. We meet the first Sunday of each month at the Evangelical Free Church on Woodmore Road in Raynham, Kent, and I'm vacancy pastor for St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland. I'd like to invite you to come along and attend a service at any of these congregations, but if you don't live anywhere near them, why not go on to our website, lutheranradio.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the nearest congregation to where you live. Go and pay them a visit. I'm sure that they would be happy to see you and that you would receive a very warm welcome in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio. Without your prayers and without your financial support, we wouldn't be able to carry on this outreach activity of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, which reaches so many around the world, and we are very, very appreciative of your support and your prayers. Today, we're very happy to welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor, Dr. Sam Thompson. He is professor of systematics, a member of the Faculty of Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Nagarkoil, Tamil Nadu, India. Dr. Thompson recently gave a paper at the International Lutheran Council's World Seminaries Conference in Baguio City in the Philippines on Asian Christology. And I was so impressed by his paper that we've asked him to come on and tell us a little bit about that. So, Dr. Thompson, welcome to Lutheran Radio.
Thank you, Pastor John.
It's great to have you with us. And you mentioned the theme of your paper, Asian Christology. Why is that such an important thing, or why should we be worried about Asian Christology?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have only one Christ. But of course, all theologies are contextual. And I think the Asian context, Asia got a unique context, and the context determines how we start reflecting about Christ. So that's why I talked about the Asian Christology.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, Jesus is actually born in Asia. I think many of us kind of forget that. So that has a huge impact on Christology, doesn't it?
Yes, whenever Asian theologians want to talk about Christ, they would always want to start by mentioning that Jesus Christ is an Asian. And that makes a lot of sense because we feel that he is much close to us. And also, I think the context, the unique context of Asia is so important because that itself determines how the reflection about Christ is done. And I always talk about at least four contexts which are so unique to Asia. And the first one is one of Asia is multi-religious, the context of multi-religions which exist in Asia. Because we often say Asia is a cradle of world religions. It's a birthplace of not only Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Zoroastrianism, and also Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and you can list several other religions which had its birth in Asia. And so one of the challenges Asian Christian theologians always face is to how we relate Christ, how we articulate Christ in relation to people of other faith, and how we can meaningfully communicate Christ in a religiously plural society. The next context would be the context of poverty. Not all countries in Asia are poor, but Asia is the second poorest continent after Africa. And I think the when I talk about the poverty in Asia, there is a big gap between the rich and the poor which exist in Asia. And especially a lot of people who live below poverty line. And so the question of the food security and the existence, the daily existence, life, and everything is in question. So whenever we talk about Christ, you always need to answer the question, what Christ means to poor in India, who are struggling to have at least one meal a day. So that would be the next context. I think the third context will be the in most of the, I would say, the most of the countries in Asia have this shared experience of Western colonialism. And so one of the bitter ironies with the colonialism is that sometimes Christianity is understood as the religion of the colonizers, or Christianity is an imported religion. When we started, you rightly mentioned that Christianity is actually an Asian religion, and Christianity reached Asia, especially India, in the first century itself. So Christianity is even older than the European Christianity in India, in Asia. But however, because of the colonialism, people often they project Christianity as a Western religion, which came to us or imported to us by the Westerners. So always the task of the Asian Christian theologians is to point out that actually, Christianity has very strong roots in Asia. Especially when I talk from the Indian context, we always need to remind people that actually Christianity reached India in AD 52. And also the fourth context I would like to point out is a context where the family, the societal ties is very strong in Asia. This is not to say that the family ties and society ties is not so important in the West, in India it is like we do not have much individualism here. So our elders and our parents and siblings are more influenced to our personal space as compared to the West. What it means that it is very difficult for a person to convert to Christianity if he is trying to convert alone, because his family may think that by converting to Christianity may bring shame to them, or it may mean breaking relationships. So these are the unique questions. These are some of the unique context or questions we have, which will determine our theological thinking and how we share gospel with our neighbors.
And in your paper, you talked about how the Christian theologians then try to deal with people, say, of other faiths as they present Jesus. Can you talk a little bit about how that's done? What methods they've tried, what angles they've taken as they've tried to present a Christology of who Jesus is to those who aren't Christians?
Yeah, I think most of the theologians in India have at least tried at least three or four ways, or I could say the major trends or major theological approach. And I would say the first one would be an inculturation model. Basically, inculturation model means the theologians of inculturation model, usually they try to relate gospel to the socio-political and religious context of Asia. And the basic question they ask is, can a person remain culturally Asian or Indian or Chinese or Japanese while embracing Christianity as a religion? Or should a person leave their traditional religious community to become a Christian? And the issue at stake is, getting converted means to the people in Asia, especially breaking away from the family ties, or so they wanted to make sure that they are not completely completely away or taken away from their family. How to maintain relationship with the culture and family, but yet how they can embrace Christ. So the inculturation theologians always struggled with this question. And also, especially they have, they try to answer this question or try to answer this question of how we can be a Christian at the same time being remain to our faithful culture. So some of the ways in which they try to relate Christ to our native culture was to present Christ using some of the cultural or religious symbols of the native culture. For example, in India, especially Jesus is presented as an avatar. Avatar means in Hinduism there is a concept called avatar, where God, you know, the ultimate reality, takes different forms. It kind of theophany, takes different forms. Maybe the form of an animal, form of a human being, for a certain period of time, and come to fix some evil, to destroy some evil. And when that job is done, they go back. So in Hinduism, the avatar, the concept of avatar is kind of a repeated reality wherein the evil increases, God takes the form of human being or some animals and come and destroy the evil and go back. And Christian theologians try to relate that to Christ event, when they say that Jesus Christ is also like, in some ways like avatar. He took the human form, but he came to die for our sin and to save us. And the challenge before the Christian theologians then is to make sure that people won't misunderstand Jesus as one of the many avatars of Hinduism or other religion, but to make sure that the incarnation is totally a different reality than avatar. So many of the enculturation theologians are very careful. So when they start talking about Christ to the neighbors of other faiths, they will say that Jesus is kind of an avatar, like God taking human visible form, human or other visible form, but Jesus, it's kind of an avatar, but it's not an avatar. Jesus is a full incarnation of God, or God in human form. And he also came not only to kill his enemies, it's not to kill his enemies, but to save everyone. So that will be the fundamental difference. So the challenge in conculturation theologians have is to make sure that they won't share that Jesus is one among many gods or many avatars of Hinduism or other religions, but to make sure that to clearly explain the distinction or difference. And many have tried, and it was successful. And some of them, when they are not careful in doing this, they might bring confusion. I think the next way of so enculturation is one of the ways, and another way of relating Christian faith to others was done through interreligious dialogue. Basically, the interreligious dialogue people, they are concerned with the religious tension and communal tension which exists in many of the Asian countries, because there are many religions, and each religion is making their own claim of the about the ultimate reality. So the interreligious dialogue people thought that it is best to bring all these people together and talk about the commonalities between different religions and to foster dialogues. So actually, in the interreligious dialogue people basically have kind of two ways of doing that. One is to bring about to basically try to talk about doctrinal difference, and they try to talk about doctrine difference in such a way that they like to present things in such a way that, okay, Anyway, we believe in one God, who is an ultimate reality. It is differently understood by different people, but actually we are all in the same boat. That is a doctrinal kind of inter-religious dialogue. But there are other interfaith dialogue people who try to not to give much importance to doctrinal kind of discussion, but they try to bring people of different religions together, and they try to talk about basically the struggles we undergo, the context of poverty we undergo, and the structural injustice we are undergoing. So try to find a solution for it and to work together. The problem with interreligious dialogue sometimes is the concern is good to bring people of different faiths together, but sometimes the cardinals of the real Christ is always many times is compromised, or the fundamentals of Christian faith is often compromised. For example, we have a great theologian, Stanley J. Samarta. He talks about the theocentric Christology, in which he says that the Christ we can see in every religion, and the Christ was present, God's Christ was present in Jesus of Nazareth. But that same Christ can be found in other religions also. We can find Christ in Hinduism, that we can call him as Krishna, or in some other religion, maybe God's Christ is in Allah, in Nabi, Muhammad Nabi. So in kind of a Christ can be found in other religions also. This goes against our basic faith and the Nicene Christological articulation, and finally we end up without having any identity. So that there should be better ways of, I think there should be a better ways of finding the religious harmony, rather than, saying that everything is same. And even the Hindu theologians, many have criticized this method, saying that, you are trying to give Christian meaning to our own religion, religious symbols, and you are trying to find converts through that. And also they say that how you can really talk about Christ in our religions when we do not mention about that. Another way of doing theology and Christology in Asia is through liberation theology. Liberation theologies, as you know, in Asia, emerged in conversation with Latin American liberation theologies of the 1970s. But liberation theology done in Asia is a little bit different because of the existence of many religions in India. Many of the liberation theologians, they try to integrate the liberation elements in various religions also. And also they, in one way, they are good in bringing about the concerns of structural injustice, poverty, and all those things which are the real issues of our context. The main problem with the liberation theology is sometimes they reduce human beings to just the social, economical, and political being. Many times the spirituality of this the relationship with God, the salvation experience, and all those things are undermined. For example, the liberation theologians, they do encourage religious conversion. Interreligious dialogue people, they do not believe in religious conversion because they believe that all religions are basically same. But liberation theologians do encourage religious conversion because they believe that for them religious conversion is kind of a social and political protest. to throw away the bad or the evil or the oppressive religions which propagate caste system or which really oppress people, which takes away dignity from people. But sometimes the problem is interpreted that people, they just convert from one religion to another for a better life in this world. They are sometimes interpreted as opportunists. The real spiritual significance or sometimes a real spiritual transformation which happens at converting from other religion to Christianity is sometimes not taken seriously. So these are some of the ways in which some of the approaches, the liberation in the religious and inculturation approaches are some of the approaches, you know, which is very much very much dominant among Asian Christian theologians.
In your paper, you also talk about the influence of non-Christians upon Christian theology, say, in the 19th and 20th century, which I found very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about how some non-Christians approached Christianity and saw it within the Asian, particularly Indian, situation?
Yeah, especially in Indian context, Jesus was highly respected by people of other religions, especially Hindus. And it is interesting to note that major theological articulation about Christ and the Bible was done by Hindus in the beginning. So these are people who were Western educated and who were so much upset with the Hindu caste structure and oppression which was going on in India. And there was in 19th century, there was the Indian Renaissance movement. The Indian Renaissance movement was basically, it was a result of at least few influences. One is because of the Western education brought by British, and because of the influence of the Western education, and also the missionary movement which happened. So basically, through the Western education, people were taught about the human dignity, the freedom, and the justice, and all those things, all those ideals, and also the missionary movement brought Christ to the culture, Christ to India. Basically, what happened is people who were struggling inside the caste structure, who were thought to be non-humans, were told that God loves them so much and God cares for them and Jesus died for them. And through faith, they become children of God. And that was a sweet news. That is a good news. And there happened mass conversions. And this Western educated elite Hindu thinkers, when they saw the human dignity through Western education and also through missionary movement, and they also wanted to see the country developing and growing, catching up with Western modernity. And so they wanted to really bring changes in Hinduism, changes to Indian culture. They wanted to get rid of the evil practices like sati. Sati is kind of a practice where if a husband dies, the wife must also die with the husband by jumping into a fire where the husband is burned. And there were similarly several evil practices. So the Renaissance leaders or the Western educated, this high caste elite Indians, they really wanted to bring about change in Hinduism and Hindu society and to catch up with the West, especially with the development, and also to prevent people flowing to Christianity. They wanted India to be a Hindu nation, and India wanted Indians to have their own culture They thought that Christianity is a Western religion brought by colonizers, so that will really upset people becoming Christians will really upset the whole configuration of the country. So let us reform Hinduism, and let us reform Hinduism whereby prevent Hindus becoming Christians. So that is the root of the Indian Renaissance movement, and I think there were several people involved in it, and one of the famous person was Raja Ram Mohan Roy, who worked closely with several missionaries, and he was instrumental in stopping many of the evil practices in Indian society. And actually, he wrote extensively about Christ and Christianity. And he was so impressed with Christ, and actually he was attracted to the Christian ethics, and he was not interested in Christian doctrines. And so he presented, so he was deeply influenced by the teachings of Christ. So he wrote several books about the Christian teachings, Christ teaching, and some of them he wanted to share it with his fellow Hindu leaders, by which they might use it to bring transformation in Hindu society. So he thought Jesus was a great moral teacher, Raja Ram Mohan Roy, and he was. But all these Reformation, these Renaissance leaders, although they were so much attracted with Christ, they never wanted to become Christians. They were attracted to Christ, but they never wanted to convert to Christianity. But they respected Christianity and Christ. But this is different from another movement which arose during that time, which is Hindu fundamentalist movement. Hindu fundamentalist movement, they never respected Christianity. They were aggressive to Christianity, and they thought that Hinduism is a supreme religion in the whole world, and I think everything good in the world resides in Hinduism, and they were more violent to Christianity. But they were in the modern day, the Hindutva, the ideology of Hindutva, where India is for Hindus. If you are a Hindu, you are an Indian. That rhetoric comes from this fundamental Hindu movements, which also arose during that time. But Renaissance leaders were more positive towards Christian faith. And so Raja Ram Mohan Roy, Ambedkar, Mahatma Gandhi, these are some of the names. They were so fascinated with Christ and his teaching, and they wanted to make best use of the Christian teaching to bring about positive change in India.
Dr. Thompson, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you for this fascinating look at Asian Christology. I'd like to invite you back next week and our listeners back as we continue this conversation with Dr. Sam Thompson on Asian Christology. And again, we thank you and look forward to speaking with you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.